Welcome to Fabulous After 50, the podcast for women wanting to make the most of their lives. My name is Julie Kennedy, and I am your host. Today, for something different, namely a male guest, and not any male guest, but the absolutely fabulous Paul Wilson, who has dedicated the last 29 years to helping people either, and very interesting fact, as the emergency response manager at the Channel Tunnel, or, and the capacity in which we speak to him today, as renowned mindset coach, who has studied with many of the big gurus out there and done an awful lot of very interesting stuff. Paul, I am delighted to have you here today. Can you please start with a brief summary of who you are, what you do, and why you do it?
Good morning, Julie. How brief is brief? Because I can talk for hours about my favorite subject, which is me. I am my favorite subject. Okay, right. A potted history. As you've just mentioned, I spent 25 years at the Channel Tunnel in a variety of roles, but my favorite 12 years of that entire 25 years was as the emergency response manager, working with the French and British authorities, military, emergency service, etc., looking at what could go wrong, trying to stop it going wrong, and then mitigating the consequences if something did happen. So we'd had, you know, weekly, monthly, and then every year we'd shut down the entire system for a night, and we'd run some major catastrophe scenario, fires, explosions, terrorism attacks, all kinds of things, and then kind of run debriefs on that and find out the learning points from the exercise. Absolutely brilliant job. But then, you know, 25 years working for one firm, I thought to myself, that's a nice round figure, even though it's an odd number, and it's time for something different. So I quit the job, and I was going to become a photographer because photography is my passion. And I talked to a few professionals who'd been in the business for a long time, and they said, don't touch it with a barge pole, because these days, I'm not sure if you're videoing this, but everybody with a phone, which is what I'm holding in my hand, now calls themselves a photographer. True. And so the floor has kind of fallen out of that market. And people now will work for exposure, ironically. You know, come and do a shoot for us for nothing. We might give you a biscuit at the end of the day and a cup of coffee. And so I thought, no, you know what? I don't want to have to hustle my passion. I'll keep that as a passion. So 2018, okay, Paul, you've left the company after 25 years. What the hell are you going to do now?
Right.
I'd always had a passion and a fascination with the mind, mentalism, mesmerism, hypnosis, neuroscience, all that kind of thing. And I'd taken on a personal trainer. And we got talking one day and he said, did you know that me and my wife, we're also hypnotherapists. And this weekend, we've got a one day try it before you buy it kind of thing. Come along. You know, you're a client, so it'll be a freebie. Okay, why not? I'm doing nothing this Saturday. Went along, worked with this one particular lady who had a fear of snakes and anything that wriggled along the floor. Now, as you know, in the UK, snakes are extremely rare. There's hardly anything that, you know, that can kill. I mean, there are adders, but their bites like, you know, a bee sting. So I think, okay, fine. We did the work. We got a resolution to the problem. She said, I'm not afraid anymore. And I felt good, but it's like, okay, well, yeah, not overly impressed. The very next day, my life changed. She sent me a video, and her and her family go out in the woods every Sunday and near where they live for a walk. And the husband has his phone out, and he's an amateur video guy. So he shoots everything, like a lot of dads do. And you hear him go, hello, darling, you know, stop for a second. Look, in the path, there's a massive worm. You need to walk around. And she goes, no, it's okay, love. And she gets on her hands and knees, very, very carefully scoops up this worm, which is about, you know, 6-7 inches long, 10 centimeters, something like that. She picks up this worm very gently and carries it across and drops it onto a patch of grass. Her husband launches a stream of expletives. He can't believe what he's just seen and almost drops his phone. And I'm thinking, I've got a superpower. So I went back to my personal trainer, who trained you, went to work with him, who trained you, and went as far up the chain as I could, bought pretty much every book on hypnosis, did every course I could find on hypnosis, and I became a hypnotherapist, which was great. But I found that in a lot of cases, I was treating the symptom and not the root cause.
Okay.
And I wanted to kind of like help the whole person. So I morphed into becoming a coach, because when you're a coach, as you know, you can help the whole person rather than just one tiny aspect of them. Now, I still use hypnosis. That's one of my tools. I've got other tools in my kit that I can help clients with. But yeah, the thing for me, the reason why I do what I do is to see that glint in a client's eye. The whole face changes color. The eyes become like saucers, and they're like zooming like laser beams at you when they finally realize that the thing that has been bothering for the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years or more has suddenly gone.
Wow, what a story. You're touching on lots of things here when we talk about our 50 plus audience. Here, you're also talking about, well, first of all, having totally recreated yourself, you know, after having had, you know, a long career, and then having had the guts to think, well, first of all, what do I like? So, okay, photography is my thing. There we are. That's what I'm going to do next. You know, the power to recreate yourself, and then to admit that, okay, photography is great and will always stay my hobby, but it's not something that I'm going to actually make a living out of. But then also that wonderful synchronicity in life. And I'm not saying we have to say yes to everything which comes on our path, but sometimes, you know, just giving things which come out of the blue the benefit of a doubt with the idea, you know, who knows? And I mean, look where that's taken you.
Absolutely. One of my biggest things is you have to put yourself out there to get yourself in front of opportunities. So if I hadn't taken on a personal trainer, I wouldn't have found out that he was a hypnotist and wouldn't take me down that road. Now, that's not to say that I wouldn't have found another way in, but because I was out there doing things, meeting people, talking to people, telling the universe that I was open to opportunities, I firmly believe the mind goes where you point it.
Yes.
If you say, I'm having a really bad day today, oh God, my day's awful, it's the crappiest day I've ever had, your brain goes, okay, Paul, we're going to have a really, really shitty day. And you'll stub your toe, you'll spill your coffee, you'll get a bill you wasn't expecting, and so on.
I totally
On the other hand, if you say, I'm having a really good day today, the life is beautiful, your brain goes, oh, that's so cool, Paul. Guess what? You're going to have a beautiful day. Yeah. And you bump into beautiful people, somebody offers to buy you a coffee, you see a beautiful bird that you haven't seen in ages, you have a fabulous day.
Yeah, but exactly, because I mean, that's what you're saying. I mean, you are a mindset coach, and I mean, our mindset is something that we can choose, right? I mean, we can choose our mindset. What mood do I want to have today? And especially if things are going bad, is then think, well, okay, you know, what can I put out there? What can I give, even though I'm not feeling like giving because I'm in anger or in, you know, denial or whatever it is? And then, you know, basically create your new reality, which is whichever one makes you feel good. I mean, some people do seem to actually enjoy wallowing in self-pity or what else, but it is choice. And that then, you know, everybody's free to choose how they want to feel today. Right, Paul, to get to the topic of today, because I love the fact that the topic that you chose, because of course, you know, mindset, and I mean, we've just had a little off-record conversation, and I can tell there are very many things you could talk about here. You mentioned the imposter syndrome. And that is something that, as you said in your little talk to me, we can all recognize and we've all had and still have in various degrees and at various times in our lives. But you were talking about the fact that you find that actually at 50 plus, it maybe affects us even more than when we're younger. So, I mean, first of all, maybe should we define what the imposter syndrome is? What do you call the imposter syndrome?
Okay, well, let's kind of go back a step back. I call the way I work, the devil's triangle. So picture a triangle covered in flames and a picture of the devil with the horns and the tail and the pitchfork and all that kind of stuff. Now, down one side, write procrastination. Down the other side, write perfectionism. And across the bottom, write paralysis. Now, paralysis means overwhelm, but that would have spelled pop, and that's not very scary. So PPP. Yeah. And inside the triangle, you've got all the things like fear of failure, being scared to put your head above the parapet, comparisonitis, being scared of what other people can say, all that kind of thing. And if you follow all of that back, there will be an event in your life that where someone has told you you're not good enough, you're hopeless, you're useless, you'll never amount to anything, you're fired. This is why we have all of these things of paralysis and procrastination. Now, when I talk about procrastination, I'm not talking about you've just had dinner. I think, you know what? Sod the dishes, I'll do it in the morning. It's not that kind of procrastination.
Yeah.
I'm talking about you want to start a new venture and you don't.
Yeah.
Or you skirt around the edges. Yeah.
You do everything else instead of doing what you know you should be doing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. My elevator pitch is most people know what they need to do. They just don't do it. And I solved that problem. You're entirely right, Julie. We all know, generally speaking, what we need to do to get from A to Z. But for some reason, we don't do it. And there are lots of different reasons why. But we know, most of us know innately what we need to do.
Yes.
Why do people hire coaches? Because It's like, why do companies hire consultants? Because the company knows what needs to be done. We need to make five people redundant, or right. we need to sell this building. But the company don't want to take responsibility for that yeah. decision. So they bring a consultant in, and they can blame the consultant. Well, you know, we brought these consultants in, and they've looked at the company from the outside independently, blah, 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 blah. I've got to fire you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, they're covered.
And it's the same with us. We hire coaches to kind of coax out the reasons yeah. why we're stuck, the reasons why we're having problems, the reasons why we feel guilt, and then to help us remove all that stuff and to guide us forward. And I think it's fabulous because it's not a luxury. 50 years ago, having a coach was luxury. Yeah, yeah. It's only athletes and maybe the really, really top echelons of CEOs had coaches. But yeah. today, I say it's essential. Because if you're stuck, if you're not going where, if you're not doing where you want to be, particularly if you're over 50, and I know a lot of ladies that, you know, throughout their entire careers have had to fight twice as hard as guys have to get where they are. Yeah. And then suddenly they find themselves made redundant, or after the COVID and all the rest of it, they've been let go for whatever reason. And now they're thinking, I'm on the shelf.
Yeah.
I'm 55. What the hell am I going to do now? Yeah. And to me, imposter syndrome is a disconnect. On one side, you've got all that experience, all that knowledge, all that expertise, all those skills you've accumulated over time. And on the other side is the thing that you want to do. And what happens is, somewhere in your mind, this huge kind of, like in the big scary movie, this big pointy stick comes up and right. starts to spread out wide and separate you from your experiences and skills and the thing you want to do, creating this kind of self-doubt and this yeah. disbelief that you now, because you're 53, you're incapable of doing anything, which is complete yeah. garbage.
Yeah, whereas it should be the opposite, right? I mean, it should be by then that we start to know what we can do, not be frightened of all the things that... Because, I mean, imposter syndrome, it's like being found out, isn't it? I actually read something quite interesting not long ago that actually very many high achievers have that. You know, you would often think that it wouldn't be the high achievers, but actually often it is that sort of live every now and then, have these flashes of fear that, you know, somebody's going to find out that, you know, they're actually crap at their job, that they're not in the place where they should be. First of all, do you believe that this affects women more than men?
Yes, definitely. Michelle Obama, the former yes. first lady, she's written extensively about her battle against imposter syndrome throughout her life.
Yeah.
Because obviously she's a person of color and she's female. So she's had to fight 10 yeah. times as hard as anybody else to get to where she was, to achieve all the things she's done. I read about a movie star who got into a state so bad that she would be invited to go and audition for a place in a movie for like the leading role. And she'd look at who else had been invited, or she'd ask.
Enough, and I'll never compare
it. Oh, no, they've got her going.
Yeah.
There's no point. If they've got her going in the audition, and she would do this. And for a couple of years, she didn't go to a single audition because she thought, well, if that person's been invited, she's younger than me, whatever. Yeah. There's no point. And it was only when she kind of thought, I love what I do and I miss it so much that I'm going to just have to drag my sorry ass down to this audition. Even if I don't get it, I've got to go there and do my best. And ironically, that first audition that she went to after this like 2-year hiatus, she got the job.
Right.
And then she didn't stop again.
So, okay, right now we do need to get into what we're going to do about it, because the thing is that we can talk for hours about how come women have this more than others? And there's actually a lady that I will be interviewing soon called Claudia Kuhorn, who's actually done a whole study on how far female brains are different from male brains. And lots of the models and methods nowadays are based on a male brain. And women do have this capacity to compare themselves a lot more to others and to look at other women around them and find them all, you know, more intelligent, more fun, more glamorous. The thing is that we all do that. So the other women are looking at her thinking, oh gosh, you know, isn't she fantastic? And doesn't she effortlessly manage this and that? So we're always comparing ourselves to others to our detriment. We've all had episodes where somebody has made us feel not good enough, and that we've then accepted that and then sort of doubt everything. And what a shame for the world. You know, all these auditions that lady, for example, that you were mentioning didn't take, you know, all the things that we could do if we could just let go or break through this. So how does one go about then, you know, recognizing, first of all, that this isn't truth, right? Imposter syndrome isn't based on a fact. It's just a thought that we have, and we could very well have a different thought about ourselves. So how does one go about dealing with it?
Good question. So there are three things that I kind of get people to do that help them defeat this thing called imposter syndrome, the fear of failure, feeling like a fake and all of that. And they're three very, very simple processes that anyone can do themselves. And they've got very, very complicated names. So are you ready? The first one, deep into creative, is called the jar of awesome. And this is not mine. This comes from, I've heard of a guy called Tim Ferriss.
Yep.
His girlfriend came up with this idea. Basically, what you do is you get a jar, any kind of jar, and you fill this up over time with little slips of paper whenever you have helped someone. Now, that can be helping a little old lady with their shopping across the road, helping somebody get their kids into the car when the kid's having a meltdown. It could be helping somebody at work. It can be any little tiny thing.
So it doesn't help.
Yeah, it's just those little moments of help. You know, maybe you've walked down the street and you've seen somebody, or you're in a coffee shop and somebody hasn't got the extra 75 pence for their coffee. So you stick a pound, you know, you give them a pound, so it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, by coffee shop, we're talking about, you know, I live in Holland, so it's not one of our coffee shops, right?
No, why you drink coffee?
Exactly.
You know, we're talking about a liquid that comes in a mug and it says coffee on the outside. Okay, let's just be clear about that. But you know what I mean? It's those little tiny acts.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what you do, each one of those that you start to remember every single day, you put it in a little bit of paper, yeah, and you fold that piece of paper up and you stick it in the jar. And on days when you're feeling, you know what, I'm hopeless, I can't do anything, you grab that jar, you stick your hand in, and you pull
your
one
mind.
Out. Okay. And what it does, you go, help little old lady across the road, or smiled at a person across the street, or gave somebody a pound. Oh, wow, yeah, I did that, didn't I?
Yeah.
I did that. And it gets your brain, again, the mind goes where you point it. So we start taking stuff out of that jar, bits of paper out of the jar, and it starts to remind us of the things that we have done to help others. Thank you notes. If somebody thanks you, you know, oh, Paul, thanks for helping with that report. You know, I've really, really got stuck and you came in like at the last minute and sorted me out. You know, so emails from colleagues where they are genuinely thanking you for helping you out, you know, stuff like this, all goes in this jar.
It sounds like a really good idea, because I think we're just women, perhaps in particular, and I dare say then 50 plus, we've been doing it for so long, it's almost become second nature that we have all these films in our heads that we run repeatedly about all the things that we've done wrong, all the time that we, you know, didn't respond in the right way, all the time when we should have done it differently, and that we just fill our heads with, as you say, we create our own reality. So the more we tell ourselves that we're, you know, not good enough, or not as good enough as Jane down the road, or, you know, that basically we shouldn't, you know, even be trying to help people because we'll probably do it all wrong and make a mess of it anyway. I mean, the more we tell ourselves that, the more we believe it. And of course, our little ego there doesn't want us to be wrong. So we will then go looking for all the proof possible and imaginable to reinforce that idea. So having that jar just reminds you, it takes you out of your head and your own little drama you're creating for yourself, and actually reminds you with the fact. I mean, I like that as well, because it's actually a piece of paper, right? It's really, it's not a film in your head. It's literally something that you're holding in your hand. So it's factual, and it will remind you of a very specific episode, not a vague feeling of, oh, come on, sometimes I do stuff right. But, you know, a really, I think that's a very nice one. And I like the name, the jar of awesome.
It's a great name. It's a great name. And the thing is, this is all of the things I'm talking to give you to work with are lifelong processes. You don't just put three things in the jar. You keep that jar handy.
Yeah.
And whenever you've got 5 minutes, you just sit down and you just remind yourself of all the little things that you've done. And the more you do this, the more things will come to you. This is not an exercise where you do it and you put the jar in a cupboard.
No, exactly. It does need to be accessible, because usually when we're getting into that self-destructive or self-doubt, self-critical or whatever mode, that's not the time where we would go looking for a jar, because we've already decided by then that we're pretty useless as persons.
Mm.
So we need it to have it really readily accessible, as you said, so that before your brain starts getting carried away with, well, there's no point even opening that jar in the first place, that you actually override that by just reaching in and taking it. I like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And hopefully the more you do that, the more your brain starts to remember by itself, you know, without you having to actually put your hand in the jar.
Yeah, absolutely. And also this exercise and the next one I'm about to explain to you, you can teach to your children and grandchildren. Because if you start kids really, really young, with something like the jar of awesome, because I can decorate the jar and getting the idea of whenever they help somebody to stick it in a piece of paper. Yeah. So that when they're having bad days, when they feel like nobody at school likes them, they just stick their hand in the jar. And again, if you're getting somebody in their 20s or their teens or their 30s, you give them a 20-year head start. Well, I'm 61, so they give them a 30-year head start compared to me.
Right. I mean, that should be one of the skills that you learn at school.
The thing is, if we taught kids the stuff we think kids should be taught, they'd be at school 24/7, 365. There's a limit to what teachers can teach. And I think a lot of it is down to parents and guardians and grandparents and aunties and uncles and cousins and siblings, all the rest of it. Anyway, so this was a different story. The next thing, now you might want to write this down because it's an incredibly complicated title. You ready for this?
I'm ready. Pen and pen.
The list.
Ooh.
I told you it was complicated. I told you it was difficult.
I'd never remember that one. Right.
I know. Okay. This is brilliant. What you need to do is you need to get yourself a notebook. Now, this needs to be one that hasn't been used before, because, again, this is a lifelong exercise.
Right.
So if you've got one hanging around the house, great. If you haven't got one, then, you know, Amazon it or go to your local bookstore. Get yourself a notebook.
Right.
And what we start to do, and it's similar to the jar of awesome, but different, is we start to list every single thing we have achieved, right the way from merit badges at school.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exams you gained at school, trophies you won at school, passing your driving test, your first boyfriend, your first girlfriend, your first job, the first interview, everything you have achieved. Because don't forget, a lot of people, this is one of the things that people forget, is that when you go for an interview and you get a job, they didn't just go, hey, Paul, we've got this job. We didn't come down and have an interview for it, just make sure you're a good fit. No, there may be 500 or 5,000 people that were whittled down to 10 or 20 people to be interviewed, then the final interviewed, and they offered you the job. That's a massive...
It is.
People don't see that. Oh, well, I've been working for this job for 5 years now.
Why do we forget the good? But we do remember on the moment, you know, the moment we get that interview, we're ecstatic. Mm. We're so proud of ourselves. Okay, so you list really everything, and that's... So
I mean everything, Julie.
Yeah, really.
So when you get offered a place at university, when you pass your exams, when you come out with a first or a second, it's a degree. If you do a master's, if you started a business, if you've had kids, having kids is an achievement, you know.
That's very true.
If every single thing, you know, hobbies. If you bought a camera and you're a photographer, if you're an artist, you learn skills. You might not think of as skills because it's a hobby, but you learn to paint, you learn to crochet, you learn to ride a horse, you learn to play golf, you learn to paraglide or parachute.
We will probably not remember everything firsthand, but so that we just keep, you know, for a few weeks or something, filling in.
As close to you as possible, because... Right. There will be times when you're sitting there in a meeting and you'll suddenly, somebody will say, biscuits. Yeah, in the meeting. Oh, wow. Yeah, I learned to bake biscuits. Yeah, yeah. So that goes on your list. And this is really important. Again, we don't do digital. This stuff has to be analog for the very simple reason that when we write, it gets kind of sucked up into the brain, which doesn't work the same way when we type.
Yeah. I agree with that.
When we actually write, it's so important that the jar of awesome is bits of paper that you handwrite, the things that you've been thanked for. And the list, again, it's something that stays with you and you just start writing.
And so the idea is you go back and look at it also every now and then to remind yourself.
Okay. There's two aspects of this. Is the continual adding whenever you remember something. But again, let's say you want to start a business or you want to start something or you want to go for that job and you are they're all 20 years younger than me. The tech has changed. And I had a client, senior sales and marketing person, for 15 years, some big company. She quit to raise the family. Family grows up, goes to school. She wants to go back to work. She says, actually, I don't want to go back to work. I want to start a business. She doesn't start that business because she thinks the tech has changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
The people are 20 years younger than me. The environment has changed. I've lost all my contact. So she built up all of these excuses, all these reasons why she couldn't. And yet she forgot, you know, all the stuff she's had done in her life, all of the achievement, the fact that she won awards for her work, you know, the fact that she was a senior manager within this company for sales and marketing. Sales and marketing doesn't change.
I
mean, we got, you know, newspapers and magazines 20 years ago, and now most of it's online.
Yeah.
So the tools change, but the actual skills don't change.
And it's still people we're dealing with, right? We're dealing with people.
That's why the list is so important. So when you're thinking, you know, you've been invited to an interview as the senior vice president, and you think, oh my God, there's four guys and there's me being interviewed. Yeah. I haven't got a chance because there's four guys and there's going to be a guy, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's the time when you sit down and you get your book out and you go, actually, I became a director of this company. I'm a woman, still a woman then.
Yeah.
And there were loads of men that went for that job and I got that job and I take this company from 5 million to 50 million or whatever you did, you know. Yeah, I did that in bloody hell. So if I did it then, I can go and do my best in this interview to become CEO or senior VP or whatever it is. Yeah. Glass ceiling, no ceiling, fuck the glass ceiling. I can do this. And I will give it my best shot. Because that's all anybody can do is give it your best shot. But if you go there with a disadvantage, oh God, you know, like I'm 55, I'm a woman, you know, they're going to pick one of the guys because they're all golf buddies and I don't play golf. Then you're giving yourself a kick up the backside in the wrong way. You're bringing your opportunity down from 100% to 50% to 30%. And again, the mind goes where you point. So if you go into the interview with that attitude in your head, I don't know how this works, but they will pick up that vibe.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe in your demeanor, maybe with the way you talk, maybe you don't use your full power, your full energy.
They can hear the hesitation. They can hear if you're hesitating about yourself, you know, they can certainly hesitate about you.
So we want you to lead this massive department and you can't even lead yourself. Whereas if you go there firing on all cylinders, all guns blazing, they're going to get blown away. Go, wow. Yeah. This
indeed,
is
it's all about mindset. To come back again to your choice of, you know, title of a mindset coach. It is all about mindset.
Everything,
what we believe
mindset
about ourselves and what we believe we're capable of. And it doesn't mean that we know it all now. It means that we have the capacity to learn new things and that we have the capacity. And that, I think, our age does come in as an advantage then, that having had that many more years maybe than a 25 plus, who does have the new technology, we have that much more life experience and personal knowledge. And I often feel that, yes, the technology is very important because our world does work in a completely different manner than we maybe learned at university all those years ago. However, we are still people, and the people knowledge is what matters. Mm-hmm. The tools help us deliver what we need to deliver or get the information that we want. But that knowledge of the human being and of the person is and always will be our strongest asset. Right, Paul, we need to move on to number three. What is your third tip?
Okay, again, this is very, very complicated, very sort of like intense title. Are you ready?
You can imagine
this?
I don't believe you anymore now, right? But I've still got my pen in hand.
It's called The Appointment.
Okay.
And this is a way of helping us begin to eradicate imposter syndrome. So rather than just dealing with it when we're feeling low, this is a case of actually getting rid of it. And so, you know, when you go to the dentist or you book an appointment to go and see your doctor next Friday at 3 o'clock, you are there 10 minutes early and nothing,
will stop
apart
you
from your car breaking down, will stop you. Go there. Yeah. This is your life. So you need to make an appointment with yourself for an hour where you're going to be undisturbed, where there's no deliveries expected, where there's no people going to disturb you. I mean, switching your phone off, all that kind of good stuff.
Right.
We want you somewhere quiet and undisturbed for an hour.
And then?
Right, this is going to sound a bit bizarre, but what you do is, let's say, for example, let's just use the current example. We want to go for this interview, but we're not putting our name down for it because we don't think we're good enough. You sit down and you start talking to yourself. You can either do it out loud or in your head. And you start, okay, you don't use the word why. Why am I not doing this?
Because
when we use the why word, we come up with more excuses.
Yes.
What is stopping me from applying for this job?
Yeah.
What is it about me that's, you know, preventing me? I can do that. I've got all the skills.
Yeah.
Have this conversation with you. I've got all the skills. I can do this thing standing on my head. You know, and it's something that I really enjoy doing and I'd be good at it. I've got the experience. I've got the network. I've got the connections. Blah, blah, blah. And keep talking to yourself. Because what we want to do is the bit that's listening to this conversation now, the bit that's talking, thinking about what you're going to cook for dinner this afternoon, that's the rational brain.
Right.
What we want to do is to disengage that for a few seconds so that the powerhouse, the subconscious mind,
can
come forward. And so we ask ourselves this question. We ask it repeatedly. You may use different words, but essentially you're asking yourself the same question.
So you're basically coaching yourself, right? You're asking yourself these crucial questions.
No, this is not coaching. This is this is different. It's kind of like a hypnosis thing without the child. So we're asking, okay, what is it? What is it, Paul? What is stopping me? I can do the job. You know, I know the MD, and I know this, and I know that. I know the company. I've done my research. What is it? Hopefully, what will happen is your subconscious mind will suddenly go, oh, yeah, choose me. I know. Right. I know the answer. It's because 25 years ago, you got fired from a job for no good reason. Okay. That's a memory that you've forgotten.
Yeah.
But your subconscious mind never forgets, especially when there's lots of baggage attached to it. And so this will pop up.
Right.
And you'll know it pops up because you go, oh, no, that's ridiculous. Yeah, it can't be that. That is just so stupid, Paul.
But you read once it's come up, you're a bit like, you know that's it.
You know, your rational brain will not accept it.
Yeah.
Kind of. And then you kind of think, you know what? Oh, yeah.
Lo and behold, it is.
I did get fired.
Yeah.
That really pissed me off. And I went and got drunk and did several stupid things. And what an idiot. And is that why? Now, once you've got that, you do two things.
Okay.
First thing is, we talked about this right at the top of the show, you forgive yourself.
Right.
You tell yourself that you're doing the best you could with the resources you had at the time.
Yeah.
So you forgive yourself, even though it wasn't your fault necessarily. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Forget apportioning blame.
Yeah.
This is about helping ourselves today. Yeah. So we forgive ourselves. And we remind ourselves that we were doing the best we could with the resources
at that time as well. That's the first.
And then immediately you ask yourself, you give yourself permission to let go of all the baggage.
Very.
And you say to yourself, you melt it, you dissipate it, you evaporate it, you blow it up, you destroy it, you run over it with a tank, whatever kind of way works for you. And you give yourself permission to let all that baggage go.
Really off. Let go.
Now, a lot of people say, well, I can't see that in my mind. It doesn't matter whether you can see it or feel it. Just tell yourself the story of this thing. Yeah, okay, I've got it. Now, yeah, okay, I'm going to forgive it. Let's just say it if you need to. I forgive myself.
Yeah.
It wasn't my fault.
That was,
Now, the thing you must understand is that it might not work the first time you do this. It might not work. I mean, if you work with me, then, the first hour, bang, we'll get it sorted, gone, sort, finished. But when you're doing this by yourself, especially if you've not done any of this kind of work before, it might take 2, 3, 4, 5 appointments. But again, if you get used to having this kind of appointment with yourself on a regular basis, when you find other things coming up, you'll be able to deal with them in the same way.
And we're worth it, right? First of all, we're worth the benefit of the doubt. Having for some people, this idea of having an appointment with yourself and asking yourself these questions might seem a little bit, uncomfortable or strange or weird. But I mean, it's suspending disbelief as well. Anything which can potentially work, don't we owe it to ourselves to give it a try and to try it again and again and again? And I mean, this seems to make total sense to me that most of the stuff, as you say, we don't forget anything. So it is buried in there, but we're chattering so much over the top of it that we don't let it all percolate up. So, I mean, to be honest, I would love to have you back. I mean, we're going to have to stop now because we're way over time already, but I would love to have you back on hypnosis as well. I mean, Paul, you've done so much stuff under hypnosis, and I saw you've walked on coal. And I mean, there are so many things I'm dying to ask you about. But thank you very much for this because, I mean, come on, at the age of 50, we should be able to recognize and face this imposter now, to pull out these things. I like the triangle very much. I'd never really thought of it like that, with the procrastination, perfectionism and the paralysis running around the bottom. That really does, the three P's there. These were really things that all of us can start, putting into practice in our life now, the jar of awesome, the list of all our achievements, and this appointment with yourself where you repeatedly ask yourself, what is stopping you? What is stopping you? What is stopping you? And until you get to what it is, and then indeed forgive the person back then. I always say it doesn't even have to be the person now. You can forgive the 25-year-old who you think should have done it differently back then. She did the best she could then, and forgive her, and then let go. Just let go. What doesn't serve you, let go. I mean, it's heavy to drag all of this stuff behind us, and we owe it to give our full potential elsewhere instead of wasting our energy on things that we can't change anyway, so we can just choose to interpret them differently.
If you think you don't deserve this freedom, change the frame slightly and just imagine how better you can serve others, if that's your thing, by letting go of this crap.
That's very good. Yeah. You say that. And very, I find very emotionally intelligent, if I may, even though it may sound patronizing, that a man say that, because that is indeed one of the things that I think most of us women struggle with, is a bit the, you know, it can't all be about me and it's, you know, spending an hour speaking to myself. I mean, come on, you know, that's self-centered and that's arrogant and that's this and that. However, often when we do make that switch that you're just talking about and say, well, how can I then better serve others? Then we realize that we're investing not in ourselves, but in others, but indirectly, of course, we are. And how can we be great people if we don't like ourselves much? You know, as we always say, you know, before anybody else can love you, you do need to love yourself. Paul, thank you very much. Is there anything you want to add? Will you promise you'll come back?
I'd love to come back. Like I said to you, this is something I am so passionate about. I could sit here and talk to you all day about this kind of stuff. So, yeah, I'd be delighted to come back.
Right. Now, what's the best way to get hold of you?
If you're on Instagram, Paul Wilson Coaching. Okay. If you're on Facebook, Paul Wilson Coaching. And if you guess, strangely, if you're on LinkedIn, Paul Wilson Coaching.
Wonderful. Right. We shall remember that. See, I think that's probably you hypnotizing us here. And also, we haven't had time to cover that, sadly, but Paul also has a podcast called The Happy Head Podcast, which you can also look up. Thank you very much, Paul. And I'm actually very much looking forward to having you back.
Thank you. It's been great. Thank you, Julie.
To the rest of you out there, now it's your turn to make something with what you have just heard. Listening is great. Acting on it is even better. So what have you learned? What will you change? And when are you going to start? So hopefully I will bump into you somewhere buying jars to put our awesome notes in and textbooks to keep our lists in. And good luck out there and see you next week.
Thank you for listening. Now it is up to you to make it happen. Join me next week for another dose of empowering vitamins as we navigate the marvelous roller coaster we call life. Subscribe and let me know what you think we should be talking about. Take care out there.